Samuel Adams once said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires in people's minds." Welcome to episode 2 of Our Hen House, a podcast which, among other things, aims to set a metaphoric brush fire. Our Hen House is a place to find our way to change the world for animals, and we are tickled that you are joining us in that journey. My name is Jasmine Singer, and I will be your co-host today in Our Hen House, along with my better half, Marianne Sullivan. In today's episode, we will give you the latest and greatest from the blog version of Our Hen House. Then we'll discuss some new directions we're taking in our quest to make the biggest changes for animals. We will talk to writer and fellow animal advocate Michael Parrish Dudell all about engaging young people in activism, and we'll end with a review of the much-anticipated and currently test-marketed vegan burrito from Chipotle, right up the street in Chelsea, right here in New York City. We are delighted to have you back here in our hen house, so please, pull up some hay, let's get squawking. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Marianne Sullivan.
Hi, Jasmine.
Hello, darling.
Hi, sweetie.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's been a busy week.
It has indeed. And as I say this, I am off to Portland tomorrow.
I'll be so sad.
I'm going to miss you, too. I'm going to...
But it's very exciting, the reason you're going.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell everybody?
I'm going to speak at Let Live, the wonderful Let Live Foundation. I'm going to speak at, as part of their speaker series, the name of my talk is Margin of Certainty, From Veganism to Activism.
And what is exactly the topic that that will cover?
Well, there's a lot of vegans in Portland, and I think that they could maybe use to get a little bit more involved with advocacy efforts, and I'm hoping that this is a very... tactful and inspirational kick in the assets of Portland.
I must say there really are a lot of vegans in Portland and a lot of great vegan food. I can see how when you feel that your goal is to get a lot of vegan food available, as for so many of us it still is, just to get that availability of vegan food, once you kind of achieve that, you start to feel a little comfortable. But let's face it, we're not in this to make vegans happy, though that's a nice side effect.
I like to be happy.
But our purpose is supposed to be, right, and I hope is, to help those animals.
Yeah. So it's been a very crazy time since our hen house started, hasn't it?
It has, and I think there's been one particularly huge transition in your life.
Yes, I'm pregnant. No, I'm kidding. I'm not pregnant.
That would be a miracle in so many ways.
Not pregnant. There's so many people, like all three people who listen to this, who just went, oh, not pregnant. No, I'm actually, as you know, I've been with Farm Sanctuary since 2007, and my last day with them will be February 12th. And it is a decision that I am sad about and excited about. And I, of course, love Farm Sanctuary very, very much, and I always will, and I will always support them as much as I can, and they're still my top favorite organization. But I'm moving on to do some writing projects and to do our hen house, and I look forward to continuing to be involved with Farm Sanctuary efforts.
Yes, I have always been a huge fan of Farm Sanctuary myself, and a huge fan of your work while you were there.
Thank you.
I hope to continue to both love Farm Sanctuary and to continue
to love me.
Well, we'll see about that. But I have no doubt that you will continue to do great work for the animals.
Thank you.
We love each other.
We do.
We like to talk about how wonderful we are.
Yeah.
So maybe that's enough of that.
So part of what we've been doing also at the same time is really getting the website, Our Hen House, going. Actually, I'm going to interrupt myself. I want to tell you that as I am talking, our dog, Rose, is foraging for food on the floor in all corners under the clock. She's under the clock. Is there any food down there? No? No food? She acts like we don't feed her.
Well, I guess we don't feed her enough from
my point
of view.
Sorry, as I was saying, ourhenhouse.com, the blog, just launched.
And it's been pretty exciting. We both said that we feel really, you know, fulfilled when we're doing it. And so far, so good. We've gotten a lot of new readers. We've gotten a lot of new fans on our Facebook page. We have a new Facebook page, fan page for our hen house. And you want to talk a little bit about what categories we broke our blog into?
Sure. The blog, which I think is kind of the only blog doing this specifically, I hope it is, because I don't want to just be replicating somebody's work, but we're not really bringing news to people. There are a lot of great organizations and blogs that are already doing that, and it's not really an opinion piece. Occasionally we offer an opinion, but only in a specific context. And what we're really trying to do is just gather and report on opportunities. I think that's the best word to use to describe any kind of opportunity that we think people as individuals might grab and do some good for the animals. Since there are many different people working in many different areas, we've tried to divide the subject of opportunities into 1, 2, 3, 4 different,
yeah.
Well, really 5.
Well, 4 different blog categories, and then also our podcast, and also a video page. But the blog categories are Class Act, which is advocacy outreach, so academic outreach. So it's for faculty and students trying to get different animal classes into their universities and classrooms.
Yeah, an area which is unbelievably underserved, though an increasing number of schools do have maybe one course in animals and society, and many, many do not. It's an amazingly under-examined area of our lives. You know, our relationship with animals is actually a very important part, an extraordinarily important part of what constitutes life on Earth. And our relationship to our planet and just who we are. And it's surprising how unexamined it is at an academic level. So we'd like to bring opportunities both to faculty who are looking for research opportunities, who may be looking for a course to teach, and to students who would like to demand a course or a series of courses and maybe possibly a minor. What a great interdisciplinary minor animal studies can make. There's obviously scientific research on the capacities of animals and literary. There are so many books written that Moby Dick, the great American novel.
Which I got you for Christmas.
Yes, which I admit I have never read, but it's the great American novel in many people's opinion. And it's basically in large part about the relationship to an animal.
You know, I have 2 friends who shall remain nameless, and they're a couple, and one just told me that they're reading a section of Moby Dick to each other in a jacuzzi every night.
That's so cute.
I know.
If we had a jacuzzi, I would suggest that we would do that.
Yeah, so there's also, so Bob Barker actually donated, $1 million to his alma mater, Drury University, to create a chair in animal rights?
Yes, he had given these $1 million grants to a number of law schools, top law schools, in order to get a class in animal law. And the fact is that the law school level, animal law has really taken hold, and over 100 law schools now have a course in animal law, largely due to the fact that Bob Barker got some of the top schools to have such a course, and after that, the other ones wanted one too. But surprisingly, at the undergraduate level, there hasn't been nearly as much attention paid to the topic, and now he has given $1 million to an undergraduate school to create a chair in animal studies, and it is his alma mater, so I don't know whether it was just a one-shot deal or whether he will continue to find schools to provide with $1 million to expand this study. I certainly hope that happens. It's amazing what he has done with his money.
And, of course, Bob Barker is the former host of The Price is Right.
Come on down!
And my Price is Right story is that with my friend Michelle Sass, I was in L.A., and Michelle has actually won a car on The Price is Right when Bob Barker was the host. And we went to see it a few months ago, and Drew Carey was the host. And during the commercial break, we were like, Drew! And we had prepared a packet about why Drew Carey should take the vegan challenge and go vegan, and we stood up and he took the packet and we explained what we wanted him to go vegan for a certain amount of time, and of course he went into some very unfunny comic
spiel, and everyone applauded when he talked about eating meat, and I kind of wanted to die. But then he sort of changed his tune, and he started saying, well, you know, actually it is the best way to be, and I think that my buddy Sass, as I call her, I think that she's still on him. He hasn't done the vegan challenge yet, but hopefully he will soon. But
back good to work, sweetie.
Well, it was mostly Sass, actually, but yeah.
Oh, good work, Michelle.
Yeah. So also we have Legal Eagles on our as a category on our website.
Yes, that's kind of rooted in my particular area of expertise, shall we say. And what I would really like to focus on is finding lawsuits, which may seem hopeless because animals have not been doing particularly well in the courts.
They can't pay legal fees.
Yeah, that does make lawsuits on their behalf somewhat difficult for people to undertake. But I think that there's kind of a failure to look beyond the straight out laws protecting animals, which are very, very weak, and perhaps do a little thinking about other kinds of ways of approaching attacking the animal use industries.
We're not allowed to say the word attacking.
Oh.
There's probably lots of FBI members who just, like, tuned into our hen house.
Right. Of, what shall I say? Of educating the animal use industry.
Attacking, educating.
About how they should go out of business.
Yes. That's true. And I know you're a lawyer and you're a good one at that, but I've always kind of wanted you to be a judge just because I would love the image of you in a judge's robe.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, maybe one day. So what else do we have? We have Money Squawks, which I think is maybe your personal favorite category.
I do think that people have not thought enough about the fact that the animal use industries are going to go down. They have to. They're unsustainable, and as they do, hopefully it will be in time to save the planet, who knows, but as they do, other people will start providing food. I mean, it's primarily a food issue, though not exclusively.
Right, it's not like people are going to stop eating when the meat industrial complex collapses.
Exactly. We're still producing a lot of people, and all of those people like to eat.
Yeah, well, a lot of people, and many of those people have nothing to eat, but that's another show, I guess.
Yes, but that's something that we would like to rectify as well as a world or as a culture. Yeah. So somebody's got to feed those people. If it's not going to be the purveyors of meat, it's going to be someone, and so they're going to make a lot of money. Interestingly enough, Cargill, the largest animal, or one of the largest agribusiness concerns in the world, is producing a vegan cheese, I hear.
Yeah, they may be evil, but apparently they're not stupid.
Exactly.
You know, when I heard about that, I was sure that it was a project of the Yes Men.
It does sound crazy. Yeah. I still find it hard to believe, but I saw it in print. I mean, if it was in print, or at least it was in cyber print, it must be true, right?
Everything in cyber print is true.
Exactly.
So there's also Oink Moo Woof.
That's our cute little name for spreading the word.
And that breaks out into two categories, grazing in the grassroots and media mavens.
Yes, there are enormous possibilities, obviously, in both of those areas for people to spread the word on a very local, very intimate level.
And actually, with media, I kind of think that media is the ticket. Because once the media picks up on the fact that the meat industrial complex is collapsing, and it's something they've already started picking up on, then the consumer demand will change. Look at Cargill. So one thing leads to another, and the potential with media on both a very small grassroots level, like reaching out to your community paper, and a much bigger level, like trying to pen an article in the New York Times or something, it is just tremendous. Just tremendous. Those are the categories in our
I would say that media would be the one that gets you most excited.
I love, yeah. No, that's true. I get a little excited when we talk about media. So those are our categories in Our Hen House. We hope that you'll subscribe to ourhenhouse.com. And of course, we have this podcast, and we also have a video page, which we're going to be expanding on quite a lot. And that's Our Hen House. So let's talk about news, shall we?
Okay, let's talk about a few of the things that we have in our blog this week, because there's actually some exciting news. Not all of our items are based on something current, but it just so happens that just today, two very current items, very exciting current items, are in our blog.
Yeah. So, for example, your hero and savior and god, Joel Fuhrman, Dr. Joel Fuhrman of Eat to Live.
I love Joel Fuhrman.
You heard it here first. Marianne loves Joel Fuhrman. He has made the news recently. Why is that?
He's apparently working. I just still can't believe this. He's apparently working with Whole Foods. And Whole Foods has decided to do a couple of campaigns, apparently, based specifically in making the foods that they promote healthier and encouraging people to eat healthier foods. And they actually seem to have figured out what really are healthier foods. They're based on three main principles. Plant-based.
Yay!
Woo! Nutrient-dense, which is kind of the same thing as plant-based, since plant-based foods are the most nutrient-dense, or at least some plant-based foods are the most nutrient-dense, and whole foods. So all in all, they would seem to be starting on a promotion of veganism. Their other partner in this project is Rip Esselstein, the firefighter down in Texas who wrote The Engine 2 Diet, which is a vegan diet. I am ashamed to admit that I have not yet read that book.
Wait, can I just back up for a second? Because you failed to mention that Dr. Fuhrman really does advocate veganism quite a lot.
Yes, his diet...
That's what's so exciting about Dr. Fuhrman joining forces with Whole Foods. And so does Rip Esselstein, for that matter.
Dr. Fuhrman's diet, he does not promote an exclusively vegan diet.
Boo!
He does not object to small amounts of certain animal foods in the diet. He doesn't promote them. He doesn't say they're good for you, but he just doesn't say having a small amount.
But you're talking about a minuscule, tiny, itty-bitty, teeny-weeny amount.
And which,
of course, we don't advocate. We advocate a total vegan diet.
Yes, but he is going specifically on health grounds, and my grounds are a combination of both health and ethical reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And he also promotes, for certain conditions, the use of fish oils, specific fish oils, which I've never really followed, but because for omega-3s. He also sells a terrific omega-3 supplement derived exclusively from plants. I think it's seaweeds.
Right, and also Rip Esselstein of the Engine 2 Diet, also I think it's like 99.9% a vegan.
Oh, really? I thought that was totally a vegan diet.
I'm pretty sure that I'm not sure exactly what it is. I'll have to look it up, but I think it's like he might make mention in his book or something of something oppressed. But, you know, for the most part, having this at Whole Foods is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think it's very
exciting. It's really exciting, and this is huge. Whole Foods has the potential to reach the mainstream, which is effectively what we want to do in order to propel our movement forward. So, also in our hen house, we reported on the fact that Starbucks now carries vegan cookies.
Yeah, I just heard this from PETA on their blog this morning. I must say that we just seem to be taking over the world.
Yeah, well, we're everywhere, as you always say.
I also read today that Starbucks is doing really well now. I know a couple of years ago they were reported as suffering, but apparently their bottom line is improving. So,
and I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. I've had friends and ex-roommates who've worked at Starbucks, and I think that they take care of their employees pretty well. Though I know that now I'm going to get all these emails from all these people about all the awful things Starbucks does, and I will read them. Thank you for letting me know in advance.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Starbucks, but then I'm not a huge coffee drinker.
No, you're not a coffee drinker. It'd be nice if Starbucks stopped charging extra for the soy milk.
That would be a great step forward, because when I do go in and get my decaf soy latte,
which is like once a year.
And it's kind of fake everything. I get only the soy, the substitutes for the real thing at Starbucks, not the real thing. But I just find it annoying that you have to pay extra for the soy milk. It doesn't cost any more.
Yeah.
And I noticed that really a lot of people order it. They can't all be vegan. I think that a lot of people just don't want that dairy in their coffee.
Mm-hmm. What I love about coffee is that it gives me a lot of energy. Something our next guest definitely doesn't need because he wakes up with it. Michael Parrish Dudell is a writer, public speaker, and social entrepreneur. He is currently the senior editor of EcoRotzi.com and the co-founder and editor-in-chief of VegDaily.com. Michael is also a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post and Crazy Sexy Life. In early 2009, Michael founded 341 Media, a digital media company dedicated to producing projects that promote the advancement of three causes, human, environmental, and animal, for one common goal. He currently serves as the president of the Sustainable Leadership Council. Michael is 26 years old and lives in New York City. The quote we started out this podcast with talked about the power of an irate, tireless minority to affect social change. I have to say, Michael Parrish Dudell doesn't come across as irate. He's way too positive for that, but I imagine there's got to be plenty of ire in there. However, one thing that's obvious about Mike, if you know him, is that he's completely tireless. Every time I finish talking to him, I leave feeling invigorated and inspired. Not only is he full of ideas, but his ideas are fresh, they're innovative. He can turn any situation into an opportunity and any opportunity into a reality. He's a writer, editor, photographer, and activist extraordinaire. Welcome to our hen house, Mike.
Thank you. What a lovely introduction. That was so sweet of you.
You can record it and play it for yourself every morning if you'd like.
I will. I'm going to have a booming in stereo in my room.
Good. You know, it should be noted that when we first met, Mike, I think what initially bonded us was that we have the same exact tattoo, and it's a fairly unusual one at that.
We do. Would you like to explain it, or would you like me?
I would like you to.
We have the word ahimsa. I have it on my arm. You have it on your leg, I think, right?
My ankle.
On your ankle. And it means nonviolence, compassion towards all being in Sanskrit. And I think the word is probably known a little bit more than the symbol. There was a magazine for a while called Ahimsa, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a magazine, and it's fairly known, like in the vegetarian world. Gandhi preached about it, and it's just the philosophy that, you know, don't harm crap. Basically.
Right. That's what I was thinking of getting a don't harm crap.
Yeah, that's my next. I was going to get it on my back. So we'll have acting just huge don't harm crap. And, you know.
Exactly. Well, that's what we're doing. We're trying not to harm crap. And ahimsa is more than just a tattoo, of course. It's a way of life that we've embraced and that you've embraced. And it seems to me that every time we turn around, you're starting a new project all geared towards social change.
Sort of the joke, isn't it? There's always something new down the line. Yeah.
Mike, it's actually pretty obvious from your incredibly tireless demeanor to anyone who knows you that you're all about affecting positive change and that you're also a very optimistic guy. But tell us what changes you actually expect to see in your lifetime.
I'm not really sure. I think the good news is that Generation Y, my generation, I'm 26 years old, and I think that my group, we're really starting to look at the world in a different way. We're starting to recognize the fact that it's no longer a choice whether we want to start trying to change the world, but it's a responsibility and it's an obligation. And we have to do something about this world environmentally, for the animals, for humans. It's all one issue. And the way we can tackle that issue is to change the way we live, to change the way we think, and to help others change the way that they live. And so it's a personal journey for me. You know, I've been vegan for 9 years, and to me, that's one of the most important things that you can do to be the change you wish to see in the world, and to help affect the animals' lives, also the environment, and also humans. And I keep saying all three because I think that it's really important that we look at veganism and we look at this idea of ahimsa not only from an animal rights perspective. I think that we have to look at it with all three in mind, because really the idea behind veganism is compassion. And compassion isn't limited to one species. It's not about animals, just animals. It's about humans and the environment and living as one in this world and really recognizing that. So for me, I've adopted kind of the vegan cause because I think that it solves a lot of problems. I'm all about effectiveness. I'm all about time management. And I think veganism is a great way to solve a lot of problems quite simply. So I would hope that the world in the future becomes a more vegan world. And I'm sure it will, actually. I mean, 2009, without a doubt, was the very best year for veganism ever. I think probably, maybe besides 1944, when Donald Watson thought of the word vegan, that probably started the ball rolling. But until then, I think that 2009 has been fantastic. I think 2010 will be even more fantastic. And I think it will keep going like that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I totally think that 2009 was a really important year. Mm-hmm. And we're both big fans of you. We're both big fans of everything you're doing. And your passion just comes through. I'm wondering, if you have any goals for working with other young activists, both your age and younger, even maybe even teenagers, to help them get inspired to affect social change and really get their game on.
Yeah, I do. I have some projects in the works that I can't talk about. You know them, though. It's our little secret.
They're fabulous, though. They're fabulous.
Thank you. So some projects that I can't talk about are in the works. But, you know, really, I think that the most effective way, I really believe this, the most effective way that anyone can create change with any generation is through leading by example. I know that's kind of stereotypical to say, but truly, I think that's the most important thing. And with that said, I think that there are numerous ways that one can lead by example. You know, for me, kind of people make fun of me because of my Facebook page. I have a very active Facebook page. But the only reason I keep it so active is not that I don't have any friends in the real world, but that I've found it's an incredibly effective tool for change and for inspiring people who you might not think about. You know, I think I have something like 1,000 Facebook friends, and half of them I would say are readers, but the other half are people I went to elementary school with, high school with, whatever, met along the way, people who have no idea about veganism or social change or any kind of progressive movement. And just by accident, they see my ridiculous amount of status updates. They see that I post these links and they read them and they think about things differently. And I would say I get an email probably once or twice every week from someone who says, hey, listen, you know, you posted this thing, thought it was great, I reposted, never thought about it this way, really going to try to do something different. So I think really using every opportunity you can to lead by example and to I hate to say it, be the change you wish to see in the world, because it's such an overused expression, but it's the best expression. It's overused because it's the quintessential life principle.
So how can people find you on Facebook? Just let them know.
Of course, facebook.com/mparishdudel. You can also find me on Twitter @mparishdudel. Or just type my name into Facebook and they'll find me. But, you know, I want to talk about the positive thing, because I know you've said a couple times that I'm super positive, and I think I am. And I think that it's definitely on purpose. And not that I'm not a positive person in real life. I think I am. But my activism is very positive because I think that is the key. I think that there is nothing more dangerous to this or any movement than an angry, radical activist. I think those days are gone, and we have to just be done with that. So I think the key to the new face of activism, the new face of veganism, is showing people that it's cool, showing people that it's easy, showing people that it's fun, and that, you know, it's not a judgmental thing. It's like, listen, this is working for us. This is super cool. Why would you want to eat in a way that harms the world and harms your fellow man and your fellow animals? Like, just be cool and be vegan. And I think that sounds silly, but I think that's the method that we kind of have to take with the movement now.
Yeah, I think going positive is definitely important for reaching anybody, and especially young people. But young activists have some special challenges facing them, parents being among them. Do you recommend not just to model your behavior, but how to confront some of the special problems that they confront, and really how to educate themselves and each other about the issues?
Well, you just said the key word there, and the key word is education. Self-educating is such an important thing, because to be honest, we don't learn, and I'm gonna use the vegan movement to kind of demonstrate this, but like, we don't learn about veganism or about animal production, at least growing up in Tampa, Florida. I certainly didn't, ever. When I was 18 years old, I went vegetarian thanks to an ex-girlfriend and started reading some books, and my mind like exploded. I couldn't believe that this was going on, and I never knew. So I think self-educating is key. I think that if people feel a certain way, they feel like, wow, this is really contributing to mass cruelty and whatever reason they get involved with veganism, to not only just feel that way, but then to go to the bookstore or to go to the library and get some books and watch some things and really become educated. Because no matter how old you are, education is the key to success, and education is the key to getting people on board. So, you know, let's say you have a 16 or 17-year-old person who lives in Tampa, Florida, like I once did, who's serious about this. With a little bit of education and with keeping that positive attitude and reaching out, I think that you can really affect a lot of people, including parents, including teachers. You know, just basically understanding that, you know, you have a voice no matter how old you are, and respecting that voice and also respecting others, you know? I think that is the key here. And I know that for myself, you know, when I became vegan at 18, I definitely went through a year where I was like, I can't believe you eat meat. That's horrible. Like, the animals are dying. The planet's dying. Humans are dying. And like, that doesn't work.
It's like fun, Mike.
I know, I was a great 18-year-old. No, I mean, I was fun. I was fun about it. You know, I'd party and say, hey, everyone's dying. Like, no.
No wonder you're optimistic now. You have to compensate for your teenage years.
Well, you know, teenage angst, we all have it. And I certainly did, too. And
I'm 30, and I still have it.
Well, I mean, I have it, but maybe not publicly. I try to not have it publicly because, again, that didn't work for me. When I did that, nobody was listening to me. Nobody was interested in what I had to say. And people were just turned off. And so when I approached it from a different point of view and said, hey, listen, let's talk about this in a way that's productive, in a way that doesn't seem judgmental. And again, and I think we have different views on this, Jasmine, but in a way that's not all or nothing. I am not of the vegan or die philosophy. I think that the goal should be veganism, but I think that you have to respect the transition. You have to respect one's own ability to make change in their life. You know, for me, it was a very quick thing. I went vegetarian literally overnight. If you had asked me the day before, I would have said that never in a billion years would I have gone vegetarian. I went vegetarian overnight, and I went vegan fully probably 2 or 3 months later. And that is really rare. You know, it takes people a long time. And I like to respect that. I like to say, hey, listen, you know what? If you're eating steak every day and you think to yourself, I can never be vegan, fine, don't be vegan. Eat steak one night a week less. And then the next week, maybe eat steak only on the weekends. And then the next...
Yeah, I hear you. I don't actually think that we differ on opinion about that. I think that what you might have interpreted as us differing is that I tend to try and mainstream the word vegan. And I'm not going to say go vegan or just stay the way you are, you oppressive son of a bitch. That's not what I'm going to say. But
yeah.
When people say, well, what about just being vegetarian? Then I'll say something like, well, I think that it might be beneficial to go vegan 3 days a week on your way to veganism. But but veganism is completely the goal at the end of the day. However, along the lines, I totally respect the transition. I was vegetarian when I was 18. I went vegetarian. I didn't go vegan till I was like 24.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to look back at that time and say, well, what was going on in my, you know, sweet little over traumatic head during those years? So, yeah, I think we're probably more on the same page than you think there, even though I come across like a radical angry bitch inside.
No, not at all. I just thought I'd heard you say that before, but maybe not. You know, Donald, I talked about Donald Watson once already during the interview, but Donald Watson, the man who came up with the word vegan, who, of course, is, you know, an idol of mine in a lot of ways, he said it best. He said, you know, vegetarianism is great, but it's just the bridge. It's the bridge to where you need to go, and you have to kind of walk over that bridge to get there. Even though these days, I don't think that bridge is necessary. I think that we're seeing a lot of people go straight from omnivore living to vegan living, because
people have a lot of different routes.
Yeah, I do too.
People just eat fish for a while, way after they've given up eggs and dairy. It's just people have a lot of different ways they approach it, and vegetarianism isn't necessarily one of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's just a matter of recognizing that we can all do things to make the world a better place, and that we all truly have a responsibility. You know, talking about young people, the difference with my generation and with generations before mine was that they were all asked in some way or another to sacrifice. And our generation hasn't, for whatever reason. You know, I think there was a lot of, in the last administration, there was a method behind that because they didn't want us to get angry and to get into the streets and try to make change. But for whatever reason, we've been coddled and we haven't really been asked to sacrifice in any way. And so what we're seeing, the effect of that, is people who feel a little apathetic and feel a little entitled. But the cool thing is that we are also a generation that whenever someone asks us to do something, we do it balls to the wall. We're serious about it. We're serious business. And we don't take no for an answer, and we keep going and going. And so it's not a matter of anything more than asking Generation Y and the young generation to get involved and to showing them how they can get involved and telling them why they should get involved. And once
that last part, telling them why they should get involved, is so much more important than we even realize. It's easy for us to forget, who have been doing this for a while, that our message has not reached the mainstream, and that each generation has to receive this information all over again. I was in a law school, an animal law school class. I was a guest there a few weeks ago. And these were students who had self-selected to take animal law, very, very caring, very interested, had heard all about factory farming, were horrified, and honestly asked me, absolutely innocently, whether there were any problems with fur.
Yeah.
Now, that just shocked me. I thought everybody knew there were problems with fur. It's easy for us to forget that kids growing up in America, they don't ever hear this stuff. We have to tell them. Just because we told their parents doesn't mean that they know.
Absolutely. And Y is so important. Well, that's funny. Generation Y. Generation Y needs Y. So important. It's so important to them. They really have to have it because, you know, unlike any other generation, we grew up from parents who said, you should always question authority. Ask why. Don't do something just because you're told. My parents said it. And I know many other baby boomer parents said that to their children. And we grew up with this. And I think it's great. I'm happy that I ask why all the time because you're constantly questioning and you're constantly reevaluating why you believe a certain thing. But I think it's important that we give people the reason why they should and in a positive, upbeat way, because that's how they're going to respond. So I think the key to youth activism, and I hate the word activism. That's a whole nother show though. The key to youth activism.
What word would you prefer to use?
I don't know. We need to make another word up. Like I have a problem with activism just because I think that activism sounds a little bit scary.
No, and I hear you.
You know what I mean? And people who are not ready to, activism sounds like something you have to devote your life to. Activism sounds
like, can you just say, like, I always say to people, you know, I'll say activism for the sake of discussion, but feel free to say advocacy or like whatever you want to call it in your head. But I agree, it scares people, just like the word vegan to some people is very scary.
And maybe it's just a matter of using the word a lot. I mean, I think the vegan, I used to be of the camp that vegan was a dangerous word to use because it was too extreme. But I have to say, after this last year, people know the word and people aren't afraid of it anymore. So it might be the same with activism. Maybe it's just a matter of getting it to catch on a little bit more. But I, you know, even as an activist, I feel uneasy when I call myself an activist because it sounds a little too, I think making the movement radical and fundamental is a really dangerous thing because I don't think it's a radical fundamental movement at all. Like that's the thing is people go, oh gosh, you know, what you're doing is so radical. You don't eat animal products, blah, blah, blah. The radical thing is, you know, is contributing to this mass cruelty. The radical thing is the heart disease that's happening in this country and the obesity. The radical thing is, you know, the CO2 emissions and the lack of water and all of this. So that's radical. What we're doing is not radical. I'm just not eating meat. Like that's, you know, that's
obvious.
Yeah, that's the least radical thing I could do, you know? So
absolutely.
Yeah, so I think I answered that question, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, part of what I think is so refreshing about you is that it seems from where I stand that one of your goals is to mainstream the message beyond just leafleting on street corners, which is great. I'm a big fan of leafleting on street corners, but you want to get the mainstream to notice, and I think that that's pretty cool.
Well, thanks a lot. Yeah, I think that's important because, again, coming from, you know, Tampa, Florida, in a community that certainly didn't know anything about veganism, I think it's so important to reach those people. And the cool thing about, I'll say it, activism is that, look at that. I think the cool thing about activism is that once you take into account that activism is a buffet, it's not a single meal. What works for one person is not going to work for another. You know, I often tell people.
Nice. I love that. I love that, too. That's
fantastic. Thank you.
I'm using that.
Yeah, take it. Come on.
And I'm going to use Generation Y, W-H-Y, just so you know in advance.
Okay, cool. That's fine. That's totally cool. So I think that once you take into account that's true, that activism is this buffet, you have to recognize that people are going to choose different ways to listen. And for me, you know, I often say this when I talk in public with people who aren't vegan I talk a lot in the environmental world because that's kind of what I do for the blog. And I'm often with a crowd of people who are not vegan in any way. And when I talk about veganism, the first thing I say is, you know, I'm not really an animal person. And I think people think that's so funny because, you know, I run Veg Daily and I do a lot in the vegetarian community and I've been vegan for 9 years and I'm always talking about it. But I think that actually serves as a benefit to the movement because for other people who say, gosh, you know, I'm not really an animal person. I go, I'm not either. And I've been vegan for 9 years and it's so awesome. And I think that we have to have all those voices. And let me clarify by saying I'm not an animal person does not mean I'm not an animal lover. Of course I love animals. And I think that they're fantastic.
Rose was looking a little askance when you
said that. And I love Rose. I do love Rose. You have my heart. She knows that. But just when I say I'm not an animal person, I mean, I personally don't own any pets. One reason is because my building doesn't allow it. But also, you know, when I go to sanctuaries and I love going to Farm Sanctuary and to Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary and all those, and I love spending the day with the animals, but I don't feel the connection that a lot of people have talked about feeling, and that's okay. I probably won't. And I think that's an okay thing. I think what matters is that I don't want to contribute to the cruelty. And I think what matters is that I'm standing up for something I believe in, which is you know, a simple message. It's peace, it's compassion, and it's respect. And if we can adopt those three principles in all of our lives, we're going to solve a lot of problems.
Absolutely. And I think that that's a perfect note to end on, Mike. We could obviously talk to you for hours and hours. And we really appreciate your being here in our hen house. And we hope to talk to you again. And we look forward to seeing all of these awesome, amazing projects. If you're already accomplishing all of this at 26, I just can't wait to see what the future holds for both you and the animal rights movement as a direct result of Mike Parrish-Dudell. So thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day, guys.
You too.
So during our last episode, we said that we had walked all the way to Chipotle and found it closed. But we went again, and we were able to eat the vegan burrito that is being test marketed at the Chipotle in Chelsea in Manhattan. It's also being test marketed, I think, in DC and somewhere else as well. So it's one of maybe two or three different places test marketing this vegan burrito.
Now, of course, every Chipotle, I think, has a vegan burrito.
It's a good point.
But it just has beans. And of course, the other items that you can have.
This one is particularly special because it has Gardein, which we reviewed the last time. So you already know that we love Gardein. So it's not going to come to a shock to you to learn that we love the vegan burrito at Chipotle.
It was very good. Though I actually have to admit, I love the vegan burritos at any Chipotle with or without the Gardein.
But it's particularly special to have like a fake meat available at a Chipotle, and I hope that all of the different Chipotles have that. And one way of getting that to happen is to go to Chipotle's website, chipotle.com, and send in a customer request saying, hey, I want a Chipotle near me to carry a vegan burrito with the Gardein. It's called the Garden Blend.
Yeah, it's an odd name.
And I got it with guacamole and the whole works, and it was kind of out of this
like,
world.
Like, what isn't good with guacamole on it?
That's true.
It was really good.
It was.
And they said it was selling extremely well.
Yeah, so go Chipotle and go to Chipotle.
Though just be sure you get the black beans. We were actually offered the pinto beans, which was a little horrifying because I understand they are not vegetarian.
Did you look that up to make sure?
I did.
The pinto beans are not
flavored with bacon.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Don't eat them.
Wow. I'm so glad that you were here to give us this piece of invaluable advice, Marianne. Well, it's 11:40 p.m. and I have a flight tomorrow to Portland. This has been another episode of Our Hen House, and we're delighted that you have decided to join us. Please email us at info@ourhenhouse.com, visit our website at ourhenhouse.com, and read our blogs. Thanks again so much for doing what you do.
Unless, of course, you eat animals.